Welcome to Legal Tender, 30 minutes of intensely satisfying entertainment and enlightenment. Legal Tender begins now.
Good morning, welcome to Legal Tender, and if you've ever wanted to buy your attorney a really nice yacht, today is your day, because we're going to explain how you do it and why you should do it.
You can't teach that.
You wouldn't want to teach it.
You know, your intros for every show to me, they're always a new surprise. Like, open it for Christmas.
Never know where I'm going.
So what is the show about today? Buy your lawyer a yacht. What are you talking about?
So we're going to talk about some of the really large settlements that have been reached in courts, both in this state and outside of it, and why actually they're a good thing. They serve a great purpose in a lot of instances. When you see the headline, mm-hmm. You're like, oh my gosh, this is just another frivolous lawsuit by a bunch of money-hungry attorneys, and this is all bad. No, it's not always bad, and we're going to explain to you why it's actually going to be a good thing.
And we're going to talk about what you should do, what you can do when you're serving as part of a jury pool. You know, what makes a good juror?
Yeah, right? And when you're not lying to the court to get out of jury duty, you need to be a good juror.
Right, and we're going to actually rail against those of you who have not gone and served as a jury duty.
Guilty. I'm guilty.
You have.
I haven't.
You haven't lied. Have you lied about it?
Huh? Well, my employer wrote a letter one time.
Well, I was called for jury duty one time as a lawyer, and the judge said, I used to be a prosecutor. It's like I'm the guy wearing the blue stripe. Love the police, you know. But again, you know, I do defense work, and the judge says, you know, have you ever had any bad interactions with the police? And I'm like, you know, and the judge's like, remember, you all are here under the oath. I'm going, oh my gosh, this was in King County. So I raised my hand. And of course, I knew the prosecutors, the judge knew me, and you know, and they're like, Ms. Thomason, would you describe the incident? And I said, well, Your Honor, I would sincerely prefer not to. It was a horrible experience, and the cop was quite wrong. And he said, well, we want to hear all about it. So I proceeded to say this whole thing and about how, you know, I was a victim of something and at the hands of this police officer. And again, I clearly didn't hold some grudge against cops. And the judge is like, Mr. Thomas, the next time that you ask if you can politely decline to answer, I will grant that request. I said, thank you, Your Honor. May I be excused from jury pool? She said, you may.
I'm surprised they actually just didn't see your name and go, you know what? Have a wonderful afternoon. Have lunch on us.
Right. So talk to me. So what's the story? What are some big verdicts we're talking about and why do we care?
So one of the recent ones that just come out is the Erin Andrews case.
Right. She's the courtside sportscaster girl, right?
She does. I've seen her on the sidelines at football games. She does the commentary
NFL.
On the side. Yeah. Interviews the coaches and players on the sidelines. Right. So she was staying at a hotel, a Marriott hotel. I don't remember where it was.
Okay.
But a gentleman got into the room that was next to her.
Pretty. Are you sure he's a gentleman? Some scumbag.
A pervert into the room next to her.
As the plaintiff's attorney would have said, this horrible, hateful human toad came into the room, leering oddly like Alec Baldwin, in the shape of a cloud of smug.
Maybe he's a changed person after
this. Okay, right.
So anyway, he gets into the room next to her, cuts a small hole in the wall between the rooms, then videotapes her nude and posts it on the internet.
What? Let's pause here. Am I the only person in the world that when they walk into a hotel room, they actually scan the vents, the lights, looks around to see if there are hidden cameras? Do you do that?
No, but after we spoke about this particular incident, Amber's like, I'm never going to look at the hotel room the same again.
Yes, I do. I do. And halftime, I'm like, oh yeah, drink it in. Come on.
I knew a guy once.
Check me out.
I knew a guy one time who he was a germaphobe. And whenever he entered a hotel room, he'd go, where is it? Where is it? And he would run into the bathroom and he'd grab some toilet paper and he would go and lay it over top of the remote. So he wouldn't have to touch it because it was so disgusting. And then he would put, this is not a joke, he put rubber gloves on and pulled the comforter off the bed. And Amber's like, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he would begin itching. Like if he didn't do all this stuff, he had a routine to stay in hotel rooms.
And this was not the Erin Andrews stalker guy.
This was just some guy.
Okay. So this guy, he cuts a hole in the wall. He puts that online. Does he make money from this deal?
I don't think he made a dime from it. No, I don't think he made a dime from it. But what Erin Andrews said, she said, look, There was no way that this guy could have known what room I was staying in. Somebody at the hotel told him and then rented him the room right next door.
Right.
And apparently...
Did she have a restraining order against this guy?
I didn't actually read the particulars of the case in depth, but apparently...
Well, it's a long case. In your defense, it's a long, long, long case. $55 million verdict is no joke.
Yeah, it was $55 million, but apparently the guy who videoed it showed it, the video, to a hotel employee after he did it.
Oh, gotcha. Right.
And
right,
so
right.
Marriott, whose name was on the front door of the hotel, they originally got sued.
Good.
Well, as it turns out, they didn't even own the hotel.
Bad.
they just franchise out the naming rights to some operating company.
Like Donald Trump's hotels.
Yes. Like the casinos that have his name on them.
Right.
Well, it
doesn't own it. No, no, right.
No. So yeah, so sued them. They got a $55 million judgment.
But of course, it's got some weird, creeper guy who has no money.
Well, and some of the commentary that I read about the cases, you've really got to be careful about who you choose to defend you in cases like this, if you're the operating company.
Yeah.
Apparently, a line of questioning really sank their ship.
Who's their ship? Who?
The operating company. Their defense lawyers questioned Aaron Andrews.
Of the hotel.
No, of the hotel, questioned Aaron Andrews about how her income had risen since the incident.
Oh, nice.
Claiming that perhaps she benefited somehow from this.
And did she?
And I don't know.
Did the jurors not like that?
I think apparently they probably... I imagine her attorney had to have objected to that, right?
Man, I would think, on the one hand, I think, boy, I'd be a little morsel I'd like to try to nibble on if I was the lawyer, because I'd want to be like, look, you're claiming you're damaged like Paris Hilton claimed she was damaged by a sex tape. She was a nobody nothing. She was a Hilton, right? But nobody cared about her until she intentionally, apparently, according to her boyfriend, leaked this tape of her, right? So therefore, it raised her capital. You see all these other sort of intimate tapes that are out there, and it raises her capital. So I'm sure that's why the judge, they probably had a debate about it. They had it called the motion in limine, which is a motion before the jury comes out. And the judge said, yeah, this is fair. Let's see if she made any money off this deal. See what her damages are.
But apparently what happened is they interviewed some of the jurors after the case.
And they didn't like that.
They didn't like it because they took it as the lawyer was saying she had it coming. She was inviting this to happen.
Oh.
And that's how they took it. And it just sank their ship. And so the $55 million judgment. Good luck.
So you have a thing called when you're going to be a juror, because we all know you're going to actually respond to your jury request, because then you can be part of the answer and not part of the problem. When you walk in, oftentimes you'll see in big cases, there'll be a jury consultant, and they may be introduced to you and they may not. Their job is to creepily watch you and predict what you might do or not do. I had a jury consultant one time who said, if you're a plaintiff in a case, he goes, number one, I don't ever have school teachers because they can't be trusted. Number two, I don't let anyone who comes in wearing a red hat, right? And he proceeded to go this completely arbitrary list. I'm like, what in the world? And I'm looking at the verdicts that he's been the jury consultant on, made complete sense, but the randomness of his, how do you select a jury, was I was like, whatever. No,
I think I'd have thrown the BS flag. I know. I've been like, no, you're making this up to try to create some value for yourself.
False
to say
value.
Yeah, it's completely false. Because you wear a red hat doesn't mean anything.
So how did they? Did you understand how they came up with the actual verdict itself, the $55 million verdict?
No, I did not read that. And what I did read, though, is that they contributed a certain percentage of the fault to her. And so her award was actually reduced by a certain percentage. Explain how what that means.
Sure. So if you're ever going to want to sue somebody, particularly your neighbor, you're going to have to show that you have damages. Well, what are damages? Damages are something you can monetarily show. What is the value of this? Mm. As an example, I crash into your car with my car. Your damages are your special damages are the damage of your car. How much did that cost? That's a fixed number.
But now, let me interrupt, because if you were to actually crash into our car, that thing is a magnet.
It's a tank.
For people to run into. No, seriously, someone the other day just ran right into the bumper of our car, smashed the whole corner of it in, didn't leave their car, didn't leave anything. Then we get that fixed. The week after we get it fixed, someone hits the front of it and puts a big thing of white paint right across the front bumper.
Oh, nice.
Doesn't leave anything either.
So my mom got a new vehicle, this was years ago, but I remember Sid Johnson, he owns a body shop in Brewster, and she was driving by and picking something up, and Sid walked out and he goes, oh, I don't have the color to this color in my storage here. I'll go order some of this color. And she's like, what are you talking about? He goes, well, I know I'll see you soon. And she's like, I resent that. And Richard, my dad, is like, I do too, because I'm the guy who's been paying. Sure enough, a month later, Sid, you have that paint? Yep, it's right here. Here you go.
Right. Did they name it after her?
Right, there you go. So when you're looking at a verdict, are you going to show your damage? How do you prove anything? You think, oh, do I have a good case? Well, what are your damage? We talked about the damage to your car. If you had medical bills, those are also called your special damages. You add those things up, that's what it gets. But what about your pain and suffering, like that, the fact that like you now are going to walk with a limp the rest of your life. You are not going to be able to, you know, type on a computer, whatever it is. What's the value of that? Those are called your general damages. That's just like, and those are usually the large value of damages. Okay. So Erin Andrews, her general damage, what is the value to her reputation? They would have had multiple experts that testified what is the value of my reputation. And apparently it's worth a lot of money. $55 million. My reputation is worth nothing.
Well, but then she apparently was able to say, I had pain and suffering too. It was emotional pain that I suffered from this event. And how do they debate that?
Well, right. I mean, you know, it's like it's the idea of somebody getting sexually assaulted and getting drugged through the mud. I mean, she wasn't a willing participant. So she's actually a victim. She's actually a sexual victim. Mm-hmm. She's a crime victim. She's also a tort victim.
Yeah.
So this is the tort case. It's not the criminal matter. What he did also would have been a crime. But when you're talking about the cash, the dollars, you know, this is how they would have come up with it. But the other issue brought up is she shares in the payment of that judgment. That's called your contribution, your contributory negligence. And a lot of people are going to be super shocked about this fact. You and I, hypothetical, Cody and I are riding a car together. We've been out hitting the bars. I mean, we are just absolutely hammered drunk. You're drunk, I'm drunk, you get in the car and drive. And I'm like, all right, good thing, you're at the wheel, and I'm drunk too. You get into a car crash, and you end up breaking my arm. Here's the issue, right? And I go, well, you know, Cody, sorry, I'm going to have to sue you because your insurance company won't pay. But suppose I go and I win and I say, yep, Cody was driving. I was an innocent passenger. What will happen in Washington State is if the jury says, Alex, you are 51% responsible for your injuries, there's a statute that's a secret statute. The jury doesn't need to hear about it that says you get a big goose egg. You get nothing. Zero.
Yeah.
So because I contributed by A, drinking, B, get into a car with somebody that I knew was drunk. So I contributed to my own injuries at least 51%. A normal sane person would not get into the car with a drunk person. And so therefore my contributory negligence in Washington reduces my award to zero. So in this case, so the Erin Andrews case, they did the same thing. They said, look, you were contributory negligent by what? We don't know.
I don't know the percentage.
Yeah, we don't know what percentage it was, and we don't know why she was, but apparently she contributed some way or another. Maybe it's because she held a press release. Oh, I'm staying at this beautiful hotel. I don't know. Maybe she tweeted it. Who knows? But she contributed in some way. But more importantly, the hotel was responsible, right?
Yeah, it was there was apparently two different companies that were involved. There was a company that actually owned the hotel,
right?
And then there was a company that actually operated the hotel, and both of them were, I think they were 50-50 responsible for it. So what
that means though is the guy who did the bad work, he also got some, let's say he probably got $30 million judgment against him. Well, he's going to file for bankruptcy. He has no money.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's gone. So the only real player with money are the hotel chains. So here they have, there's an extra probably $22 million that they have to pay. So think about this. If you own a business, think about, you have somebody come into your property. They break the law, right? One of your employees is maybe or probably complicit, and you got to pay $20 million, $22 million, right? Be afraid.
And have cameras.
I know, right? So what it shows is that, like, even though that the business owner knew nothing about it, they were liable because one of their employees allowed this to happen. Mm-hmm. So if you think that your employees can just run around and do whatever they want to do and you're okay and it's their problem, you are wrong. If you think that you can let people come on your property and break the law, you are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Get ready to write your lawyer your lawyer a check, but get ready to write the other guy a check for a G5.
And I'll send you a selfie when I'm on it.
Yeah, right?
The other case that I think people, we've all heard about this case, but I think some of the facts get jumbled, is the McDonald's case.
Right.
Where the woman.
Great
who,
case. Love this case.
This is an amazing case. So 1992, a woman named Stella Liebeck goes through the drive-thru of McDonald's in Albuquerque, New Mexico, gets a cup of coffee. She's the passenger. They then exit the drive-thru, stop, so she can open the lid of coffee and pour creamer in.
Right.
She has the cup of coffee between her knees.
Scary.
Scary. Then spills the
amateur, actually. Very amateurish. I think we could all agree to that.
So she spills the coffee all over her lap.
Yeah.
She gets third-degree burns all over her thighs and everywhere. And yeah.
Second and third degree. They were bad.
Yeah. No, she spent 8 days in the hospital.
Skin grafts. Big deal.
The whole deal. So she then sues McDonald's. Here's the part that I didn't know. She tried to settle with McDonald's prior to going to trial. Do you know how much she wanted?
Was it just her medical bills?
Yeah, it was $20,000.
Yes.
You know how much they countered for?
Zero, right?
$800.
They
offered to give her $800.
Yes.
So then they went to trial.
I'm going to interject here. So this is an important point for all of you that think that you're going to slip and fall in Walmart and they're just going to pile money on you. What they will do is they will settle zero. Zero, 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 because they know that there are scammers that are out there, and they are everywhere. Are you kidding me? They're everywhere. And so therefore, these big corporations have made the decision, we will try every case to verdict in every case. Because the second it gets out to anyone that, oh, well, we just slip and fell, and it was just, you know, even if it was, you know, well, maybe it was real, not real, it gets out, the verdicts come. So if you are injured in a mom-and-pop store, the insurance company will settle. If you're on the other side, will settle. Mm-hmm. But big chain, good luck.
They got a team full of attorneys, and they're going to fight, fight, fight.
They got to pay for all their shoes, all the loafers they got.
Yeah, so they went to trial. They went to trial over this, mm-hmm. and it was an 8-day trial. This is a long trial for a cup of coffee spill.
Right, right.
Yeah, so the defense attorneys brought up an expert. He was an expert in liquid interaction with the skin, thermodynamic expert.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And so there actually was in the manual for all the franchise owners of McDonald's, it said you have to keep your coffee between 180 and 190 mm-hmm. on the pot.
And for those of you who don't know, when you go to Starbucks and you say, hey, I want a cup of coffee, they will have their temperature set below 170 degrees. Mm-hmm. If you ask for, let's say you're Capitol Hill and you say, hey, I'd like to have a double tall non-fat ice cream latte, light on the flavor, one pump, and 173 degrees. I'm just saying. If that happened to be your drink, then they would say...
You should not talk like that.
Are you sure? 173 degrees? Look, buddy, I was a lawyer over there for a decade. I spent 20 years there. I knew my drinks. Okay, I know my drinks. You should see me when it comes to booze. But
that I won't question.
Right. So in that, you won't... Right, exactly right. So in that case, they'll say 173 degrees. I don't think so. And they'll want to have a manager get approval to go above 170, because you can get burned above 170. Not just immediately, you can get burned like 5 minutes later. In the McDonald's case, at 190 degrees, was it 100, what was hers?
Hers, they actually tested the restaurant that she got burned at, it right? was 185 degrees.
Okay, 185, but somewhere in there, but you can actually get third degree burns 20 minutes later from a coffee that hot in a styrofoam cup. So that's the reason why you're like, oh my gosh. And did you know that there were over 500 people who had also written in complaints for the exact same thing, saying, hey, I burned my kid got burned. Think about how many times you got little terrorist kids in your car, and they're trying to jump over you and stuff because you don't wear seatbelts. It was the 90s. You know?
And you just left them in your cars, you ran into the store.
You would just smack them with the back fist, say, get back in the back.
And that was back in the day, if a cop found you doing that, he actually would just talk to your kids till you got back.
Oh, he was on for you.
Exactly right.
It was
right.
The 90s. Say, yeah. Can you hold this kid while I give him a good noogie? Bam, bam. Bam, bam. Right. This is the 90s, right?
Yeah. So they brought this expert up and he goes, hey, look, when coffee's this hot,
yep.
it takes 2 seconds to get third degree burns on your legs or your skin if it gets spilled. It's not even safe to consume at this temperature.
So therefore, if you're running a sprint, it's totally safe. Like, you give it to Michael Johnson, it's totally fine. But for the rest of us sitting down, not so good.
Yeah, so they found out too that McDonald's had received over 700 complaints.
Oh, 700, okay.
Of the same exact uh-huh. thing. And in some cases, they'd already paid out settlements.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they'd paid out several settlements for the exact same yeah. thing. And so at the end of the day, she got awarded $200,000 for all of her damages, but then the punitive side of it was $2.7 million.
Right, and the way that, you know how they came up with that verdict?
No.
What they did is they said, okay, McDonald's, we want to take your profits from coffee sales for one day, right? What are your net profits? And that was a figure that they came up with. So it wasn't just a made-up number. They said, okay, McDonald's, you've been burning people forever here, and we're now going to, you know, make you pay that. And so the verdict was like 2. Whatever million, and what happened?
Yeah, so the 200,000 was reduced by 40,000 because they said, actually, you're 20% responsible for your injuries.
Which I would probably have put that around 40% for me, maybe 50%. I mean, putting coffee between your legs, really. But still, I think that she should have had some award because so many other people had been injured.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so then a judge comes in and says, that's probably a little bit too high. It got reduced to $480,000. They were both going to appeal. McDonald's and Liebeck were going to appeal. And then they settled out of court, and it was a secret settlement. No one had any idea.
Yeah, so this is the case that people use to talk about jackpot verdicts. And they use this case, which is not true. I mean, it was not true. It was, $2 million for spilled coffee. No. Wasn't her medical bills like $100,000? Somewhere around.
No,
there.
It actually, her medical bills weren't that expensive, which I was surprised. I'm like, yeah, this was the early
90s. She had skin grafts.
I think it was only like $10,000 or $12,000.
Okay. But you know, the change now, of course, with Obamacare, would have been $200,000 or $300,000. So, we have, assuming she could even get in, it would have taken her quite a while.
She had to go to Canada.
Right, she had to go to Canada. this is an example of what people say, hey, we should have tort reform. Interestingly enough, that's a tort. This thing that you, T-O-R-T. Mm-hmm. When people talk about torts, those are lawsuits. So if you're injured, that's a tort. When they say tort reform, they're talking about capping verdicts. And this is a bad idea. This is a bad idea. For example, the Washington's insurance commissioner, they released, because they were concerned, oh my gosh, are we having jackpot verdicts against doctors? Well, they released their own report, and they realized, no, there aren't any jackpot verdicts. And actually, the settlements have gone down. You know, the payments have
They've gone down.
Yeah, so Washington Insurance Commissioner Mike Cradle, he's the one who released this report. And they're like, oh my goodness. So, because what doctors were trying to say is, that's not true. I object to facts that are false, that are true.
I don't like them.
Right. So that I don't like. So what they were trying to say was that, hey, we have we should protect our doctors and limit any of this general damage we've been talking about, any injuries, to a random $350,000 cap because our insurance is going up. It's true. Doctors' insurance are going up through the roof. Mm-hmm. But it's not related to actual claims that are made. It's related to insurance companies losing their investments. So they say, oh, sorry, we lost some investments. We're going to now charge doctors more premiums. Doctors, why are we doing that? Because they're calling? Oh, because we're getting sued all the time. Not true at all. Not getting sued at time at all. The number of lawsuits against doctors have decreased. Really? Shocking. Look it up yourself. It's all right there in Washington archives.
That's amazing.
I know.
That is not what
you're welcome.
That is not what you read in the newspapers.
No,
I'm uncomfortable with what you just said.
Well, if you want to see the you can go to our website, which is ltmedia.tv, and you can watch our episodes, and you can see how uncomfortable you look. You look oddly uncomfortable.
I just don't like any of it. But, you know, some of the values of lawsuits that are coming out today are a lot bigger than we've ever seen. For instance, Volkswagen, we talked about this last October.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
They were cheating on their emissions stuff. Then they came out and said, we're really sorry. And there was some people who wrote some really sophisticated code to cheat.
Right, right.
Well, their stock price tanked by half.
Nice.
And now they've just been sued by...
It's time to buy, right?
Maybe. They just got sued for $3.7 billion by a bunch of these people who've owned their stock.
Okay.
And so this is a case that's going on in Europe. This stuff happens all the time. I mean, this is going to take years to work out. But these billion-dollar judgments, mm-hmm. at least since the financial crisis, against corporations, they happen all the time. I mean, think about the BP oil spill.
Sure.
And I think that was $35 billion that they got dinged for. You look at some of the banks, they've been dinged for hundreds of billions of dollars mm-hmm. in damages since the financial crisis. So I think some of the values of the high end of these verdicts have actually gone up in probably the last decade.
When you think about, you know, okay, well, how does this affect me? I'm a juror here, which, by the way, go and serve, because if we don't, all we have who are going to go and serve are people who are not qualified to serve. So please go and serve. And actually, it's really interesting. You'll realize there are differences in lawyers. an amazing difference in lawyers. You'll realize that the judges are going to love you. They're gonna look at, see, every time I've talked to jurors, they're like, just I love the judge. She was so great to me. She was fantastic. Yes, I know, because you're their voter too. No, but they will treat you great. It really is a great experience. But you should understand that you only get a part of the story. You only get a part of the story. Did you know in Washington that it is absolutely, positively legal to discriminate on the basis of your marriage? Did you know that?
Say what?
Yeah.
Explain this.
If you are not married, if you're single, for all the single ladies out there, and all the single men out there, Washington has decided it's legal to deny you the right to file a lawsuit if you die. Number two, if you don't have any kids, Washington State has decided it's legal to discriminate against you because you don't have any kids. Did you know that?
Amen.
Yeah, right. Right. So me, I'm married, I got kids. So if I get killed in a car crash, my wife and or my kids can file a lawsuit on my behalf. It's called Washington's wrongful death statute. Mm-hmm. Right? Makes sense.
Okay.
But my brother, not married, my brother, no kids, gets killed in Washington State. He cannot file a lawsuit because the legislature, in its ridiculous, back-minded, crazy talkness, decided to punish people who are not married and don't have kids.
So time out. So he's walking across the sidewalk,
uh-huh. My brother's walking
minding
his own business,
and a Microsoft truck comes and barrels
and the
him
guy's
over,
hammer drunk, right?
On drugs, kills him in the sidewalk. He doesn't get anything.
Here you go. I'm going to read you some code here. Okay,
oh,
RCW 4.20.010 is Washington's wrongful death statute. And if you're watching this online, you realize I'm quoting this by not even reading it. I'm not even reading it. There's two beneficiaries, a first tier and second tier. If you have a spouse or a child, they can sue on your behalf for their own injuries and also for your death, right? Mm-hmm. But what if the second tier is what happens if, I was talking about this today with Nicole, what happens if you're second tier? What if you don't have that? What if you don't have a spouse or kids? Any dependent parents or any dependent siblings can sue. Dependent meaning you pay for them, they live with you, you pay for all their stuff, and you got to prove it. Otherwise, you do not have a legal right to sue.
What about if I donate a sperm to a sperm bank? I have some potential children sitting there.
I think you waive your parental rights before you do that, but I've never actually seen the forms. It's on a Saturday night, I'm drunk, I don't really receive the forms that happens.
Just kidding.
I actually donate. No, when I was going to law school.
No, that only happened once.
But when I was going to law school, I remember I would stop by the plasma bank. I remember donating plasma, getting $50 for that.
Don't they have a gigantic needle?
Yes, and yeah. I was like, this is not worth $50 at all. This is a horrible deal. Yeah. So
for 75, maybe.
Right. And so you think about our laws and you realize, oh my goodness, even in Washington State, you know, this purported state of equality, right, where you're discriminated against, crazily discriminated against,
yeah,
in the judicial system. Here's another example. If you get convicted of a felony in King County, you have to pay something called a legal financial obligation, okay, an LFO.
To the court,
right. And it's just basically the cost of doing business. In King County, it's $995. Right, so basically, it's a grand on average for.
Is this charged or convicted?
This is once you're convicted of a felony.
Okay.
You get convicted. You pay these fines. You know what it is in Whitman County? Guess.
$10,000.
Okay, same crime, same deal. It's $7,000.
Oh my gosh! I just threw that out of the air.
Right. Yeah. Wow. So $7,000. This is so think about this. From county to county. County to county, you could pay seven times the amount as you would someplace else. Think about it between Chelan, Douglas, and Okanagan counties. Some judges will give you, like in Douglas County, for example, you get convicted of a DUI, first DUI, they'll say, hey, we'll put you on probation for 2 years. That's an accurate and fair reading of the law. Other counties, I won't name the counties because it'll talk about the judges, but they'll say, you get convicted of a DUI, your first DUI, you're going to go on probation for 5 years. I think that's an unfair application of the law. But you realize, though, there's a patchwork of laws in our own state, in our own county, that depending on where you get stopped and who you get stopped by, it's a completely different world. Did you know? I know, I'm just on a roll here. Sorry. Did you know that if you
Wind
get,
him up.
I know.
Wind him up.
You get pulled over by the feds. The feds don't need a warrant to search your trunk.
See,
or
you've always
box.
Thought this is BS.
Right.
BS.
But if the state patrol pulls you over, they got to get a warrant to open your trunk or your glove box.
What about your house? Can the feds come in your house without a warrant?
What's interesting about this is the Fish and Wildlife can come in without a warrant.
What? In your house?
It's super weird. It's never been challenged. I'm looking forward to somebody who... Everyone listening, if you get convicted or charged with a big game violation and they come into your house without a warrant, let's get together, put together a pile of cash, and we'll take this to the Supreme Court. We will find this is unconstitutional.
Let's put together a pile of cash.
Load it on my back, and we'll take it straight to the Supreme
Court. You guys get your friends together and give us a pile of cash,
right.
And we'll fight to the death for
fight
you.
Fight like wild cheetahs.
Yeah. Selfie time.
Selfie, right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what do you take away from this?
You know, I think the big takeaway for me is if you're going to be a juror, you have to decide if you're a juror whether the damages are real or whether they're actually fake. So a lot of people will bring, I mean, you've seen this, a lot of people will bring lawsuits where the damages, they aren't real. They're essentially, they're made up.
And they lie to their lawyer about it.
They lie to their lawyer, the lawyer lies for them. But some of
the
damages...
Well, the lawyer repeats their lie, but the lawyer doesn't know their lie. Because the lawyer actually is not allowed... I want to defend all lawyers.
Okay, I'm not going to buy that, but go ahead.
Right. I repent that I just said I want to defend lawyers, because I swear 9 out of 10 lawyers are just horrible.
Okay, I object to your statement. I want it stricken.
Okay, all right, fine.
I'll edit that out. But there are a lot of awards where people have truly been damaged. Like this McDonald's case, I think that was a great award.
Mm-hmm.
And I think jurors need to really consider the merits of the case and award whatever damages the people are due.
Yeah, I think that's an important point. And also the idea that we are a group of people who are just trying to figure stuff out. We are not this highly enlightened, galactic people who know truth everywhere. I mean, truth, right, and the application of law and justice changes on your zip code. Does that seem right? Of course it does not seem right. I mean, within the states, within the United States. If you're talking some other country, like, well, of course, that country sucks. It's not surprising. But you'd think that, well, it shouldn't be different if I get pulled over in that county versus this county, or if I'm suing in that county for this county. But it is. And so my takeaway is, and when I talk about the jurors, I just say, look, now I want you to look into my heart, right? And when you hear the case, you make the decision about what you think is right, and I trust you. And that's what I'm saying to our listeners. We trust you to A, report to your jury duties.
Right? And stop skipping.
Right, and just to B, trust yourself. You will make the right decisions. And remember, you're dealing with a very complicated system, but the truth will write a check. Which sets you free.
Or at least your lawyer.
Well, this is Legal Tender.
See ya. The kind of work it takes to create wealth and the work it takes to keep it are very different. I'm Cody Gunn, CFA and owner of Gunn Capital Management. My firm is dedicated to helping you create a legacy for your family and the people you care about. Give us a call in Brewster at 509-699-3144 or visit us at GunnCapital.com. We'll walk you through the critical steps in maintaining and growing multi-generational wealth.
Opportunity, prosperity, legacy. We are Gunn Capital Management.